you hate government, one of them libertarian types, or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show. But now we go to Palestine issues here with Ramzi Baroud. He's managing editor of Middle East Eye, and he's the founder of PalestineChronicle.com. And his latest book is My Father Was a Freedom Fighter, Gaza's Untold Story. And he's got a new one that we put up this morning on the blog at antiwar.com/blog, Ravaging Gaza, the War Netanyahu Cannot Possibly Win. Welcome back to the show, Ramzi. How are you?
I am well. Thank you for having me, Scott.
Good. Yeah, very happy to have you here on the show. And I really appreciated this article because you go back over the history of the past few weeks leading up to the current crisis. Not just, you know, to assign blame or whatever kind of thing, but to explain what it is that the Israeli government is really up to. And when we have, you know, families wiped out here and a group of young boys playing on the beach there being killed, then it sort of distracts from the larger issue of what the hell is going on here. Why in the world is Benjamin Netanyahu bombing the Gaza Strip? What does he hope to even accomplish anyway? And so I'd like to give you that opportunity to say it all out loud here on first the background of what led up to the current crisis and then what's really behind the motivation of the Israeli government and what they're doing now.
Right. I think really the key to understanding what is happening in Gaza goes back to John Kerry's latest push for peace process in Palestine, Israel. We all know that the period that he has given both parties to reach an agreement has failed. It failed mostly because Benjamin Netanyahu basically would not cease the settlement, illegal settlement construction, which was the only condition that the Palestinians had in order for them to prolong negotiations and to reach that agreement. But not only did the peace process fail, but Hamas and Fatah reached a unity agreement, which meant that the only really lifeline that Netanyahu keeps using in order for him to discredit Palestinians is no longer there. Because Hamas is saying, well, we agreed to the political arrangement with our rivals in the Fatah party in the West Bank. It means that Abbas will continue to speak on behalf of Palestinians. He will continue to conduct his business with Washington, with Tel Aviv. And we, as an opposition group, we will continue to voice our objection to any political deal we are not happy with. But more or less, there was some sort of a cohesive Palestinian front. And that is something that Netanyahu found extremely alarming. He immediately started calling on the U.S., on the Europeans, to boycott Abbas, to boycott the government, and not to do any business with terrorists. Now, the problem is Hamas was kind of maintaining its political line. No rockets are being fired from Gaza into Israel. Now we are talking about political process and such. Netanyahu finds that alarming because it's always useful to have the Palestinian who's lobbing that rocket that falls in the middle of nowhere in order for Netanyahu to constantly keep using that line that Israel is under threat of complete annihilation and Israel is Israel's security is in danger. And that is always that's a very important line in the Israeli Hasbara, in the Israeli military and political propaganda and discourse. Because on one hand, he is able to justify his actions and his settlement construction and his rejection of any potential peace agreement with the Palestinians on the behest of the Americans. But also, it will allow him to keep his coalition government intact. His coalition is mostly made of right-wing, ultra-nationalists, and people bordering on fascism in Israel. It's the most right-wing coalition in the history of the Israeli government. And they are constantly demanding more of him. If he kills one, they would say it's not enough. If he goes to war, you haven't moved fast enough. You haven't attacked with enough ferocity and so forth and so on. So he's constantly trying to cater to that extremely angry crowd in the right wing in Israel, trying to satisfy their whims and trying to meet the expectations of the settlers and so forth and so on. And of course, a unity agreement between Hamas and Fatah is not going to allow him to achieve such political objectives. The event that supposedly triggered all of this was the disappearance and the kidnaping and the murder of three Israeli settlers in the West Bank. Now, this is a particularly interesting event. First of all, the event did not really start there. The event actually started during the Palestinian commemoration of the Nakba, the catastrophe, which is an event that this commemorates once a year for the last 65 years when historic Palestine ceased to exist in favor of modern Israel. Two Palestinian teenagers were killed in cold blood near Jerusalem on that day. That was in May. There was a lot of fury and anger building up in Palestine. And then the three settlers went missing, and then their bodies were discovered about 2 weeks later. Now, of course, in the way, not just in Israel, but also in Western media, mainstream media in general, they tend to really forget about any timeline that is not interesting as far as Israel is concerned. So as if the conflict started with the disappearance of the three settlers, not with the murder of the two Palestinians, not with the fact that there is a very oppressive military occupation, really, that has existed in that part of the world for all of these years. So everyone is asking Israel to, you know, to show restraint and pushing the Palestinians to cooperate. And finally, the three settlers were found dead. One of them was a soldier, 19-year-old soldier. Two of them were teenagers, 16 years old. And they were found murdered. And that, of course, is an unfortunate event. But, of course, Netanyahu had absolutely every opportunity in his hand right now not to go after those who murdered the settlers, but rather to use that as a political weapon against the unity government. So the attack against the unity government began immediately. Abbas was asked, he was given an ultimatum, break up with Hamas, even though Hamas said, we have nothing to do with the murder of these settlers. And Hamas is not the kind of movement that would shy away from taking responsibility for such acts. In fact, they do it for the very purpose that they want to take responsibility of such acts. But of course, Netanyahu had no room for such talk, and he began an arrest campaign reached about 300 to 500 Hamas supporters in the West Bank. It was trying to provoke Hamas into retaliating. Hamas did not. Several Palestinians were killed in the West Bank. Hamas still did not retaliate. A Palestinian kid, Mohammed Abu Khdeir, was burned alive in a refugee camp called Shafat near Jerusalem, and still nobody retaliated. But what was really dangerous, and I spoke about this in my article, is that Palestinians were actually uniting in a nonviolent resistance in the West Bank and in Jerusalem, which is kind of more or less unprecedented. And Netanyahu does not want that. The last thing Netanyahu wants right now is a Palestinian uprising that is using nonviolent means. It's going to bring unwanted attention to Israel, and it's going to make it extremely difficult.
All right. We'll have to hold it right here and go out to this break. We're talking with Ramzi Baruht. He's at antiwar.com/blog with this one, Ravaging Gaza, the war Netanyahu cannot possibly win. More on the other side of this break. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. and they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Robertson at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show, here on the Liberty Radio Network. I'm talking with Ramsey Baroud. I just hit refresh on antiwar.com. The latest death toll there is 204 Gazans killed, one Israeli, as ceasefire efforts fail. And we're talking about the background and really the political motivation, the background of the story, and the political motivation of the Israeli leadership in doing what they're doing here. And it's all, I think you're saying, it's really all comes down to at least revenge for Fatah creating this alliance with Hamas, this coalition government. And, you know, if the Israelis are lucky and get what they're after, it'll end up somehow breaking the alliance. But I guess I don't really, and I just don't know enough about it, Ramsey, I guess. How is this supposed to necessarily translate into breaking the alliance between Fatah and Hamas just because they bomb Hamas? I don't really see the
right. That's a very good point, because what they are hoping to do, and that's what they've been doing even before the war, is trying to exert pressure on Mahmoud Abbas, the head of the Palestinian Authority in Ramallah, which is really working under Israeli occupation. So it's an authority that's really not independent. It's being controlled by Israel, but it's being funded by the U.S. It's being funded by European countries, and there are allies in the region, the Saudis and the Emiratis, for example. If they put enough pressure on Abbas to break away from Hamas, because per their standards, it's a terrorist organization, then Abbas is going to find it extremely difficult to survive financially without depending on these countries. He can't defy the U.S. all the way on this one. So he's really on a kind of a tight leash, as they say. If he is going to carry on with his unity with Hamas, then the U.S. could find itself in a situation that they would say, well, it's either you break up with Hamas or you are not going to be receiving funds from us anymore. The only reason that Abbas exists right now is because of funds. He has no moral authority whatsoever. He has very little support amongst his people. And really, he has no kind of control over the security situation. It's the Israeli occupation army that's controlling the West Bank. So take that money element away from his authority will cease to exist. Now, so there's a lot of pressure on Abbas right now to break up with Hamas, because Hamas is a terrorist organization that's firing rockets on Israel. But of course, the price for that, the collateral damage, if you will, of that sort of political gambling of Netanyahu, is so far 213 people, over 1,500 wounded. The last of the victims were four children playing on the beach. And what's really kind of, I'm not really sure what is the right term to use here, but what's really interesting is the fact that there was this international uproar over the disappearance of the three Israeli teenagers. And you know, if we use the word settlers, we were being attacked for, you know, not being sympathetic enough. If we mentioned that one of them was a soldier and another one was, you know, taking photos with automatic rifles, humiliating Palestinian prisoners, we were called all sorts of names. But if you mention in the mainstream media that, you know, 43 of those who have been killed so far are children, you know, then all hell is going to break loose. We don't know their names. We don't know where they come from. We don't know. We know very little about them. And that's what Israel is able to do. They are able to get away with murder, literally. Well, on the other hand, the media looks with so much pity and so much sympathy with one single Israeli who's wounded, and of course with three Israeli teenagers being murdered. Well, double standards is being used when it applies to the Palestinians who are falling, being victimized, you know, being killed while fasting the month of Ramadan, children, women, entire families is being wiped out, so that Netanyahu may send a may send a signal to his right-wing government that I am the tough man of Israel. You know, Lieberman is not an alternative for me. I am here and I'm strong and I can do what I please in Gaza. And he's getting away with it. And this is really the outrage in Palestine right now. They are very angry, not just at Israel, but very angry at their own leadership that is failing them. If you look at Mahmoud Abbas's language, it's absolutely appalling. I mean, he's actually more or less blaming Palestinians for resisting. He's calling their resistance pathetic. I mean, these are people who are being brutalized in a very tiny little stretch of land that is being surrounded by the Israeli Navy, by the Israeli Army, and by the Egyptian Army in 365 square kilometers. And they are being bombarded day and night. They have no room to escape, as John Stewart put it yesterday. What do you want them to do? Just swim? There's absolutely nowhere for them to go. They're being brutalized, running out of medicine, running out of food, and nobody is coming to the rescue at all. And the media is making it sound like this is a fair battle between Israel that is defending itself, supposedly, and the Palestinians who are so stubborn and persisting in lobbing rockets into Israel. Mm-hmm. And they insist on not understanding the context of the story and how unfair the story is.
Right. All right. Now, unlike the U.S. State Department, I certainly recognize the right of the people of Gaza to resist. But that doesn't necessarily mean this or that tactic in resistance is the best one to deploy at any particular time. And I know they really don't have, you know, anything else to fight back with other than these, you know, basically homemade rockets or garage-made rockets that they're firing. But they know that they're completely ineffective at really doing anything other than handing a talking point to their enemies. And I wonder if you could explain what you think is Hamas's strategy in continuing to fire the rockets to what end, you know?
Right. And that's the thing, Scott. I mean, just because I tried to write the history of Palestine in the last 100 years and throughout my writings and my books, I always run to these talking points. I mean, no matter what phase of history of conflict between Israel and the Palestinians, even before Israel became a state in 1948, mm-hmm. there was a talking point, meaning that they will always find something that the Palestinians have done, whether they've done on purpose or it was, you know, some ploy of some sort, right, or some unruly person somewhere did something. They will always find a talking point to punish the entire population of Palestine. In any country, in any conflict, in any context.
Yeah, no. Well, Ramsey, honestly, I'm not trying to justify a damn thing Israel's doing here at all. I really simply am curious as to what does it help Hamas to do what they're doing from their point of view at all?
This is what I am saying, Scott, that even if Hamas did not do anything, I mean, look at the West Bank right now. What are the West Bankers doing? Are they throwing rockets into Israel?
No.
Absolutely not. But what is Israel doing to the West Bankers? Oppressive military occupation, killing their children, imprisoning their men, humiliating their women, checkpoints everywhere you go in the West Bank. You know, so what is Jerusalem doing to the Israelis? Even nonviolent resistance is hardly being used in Jerusalem right now. Why is the military occupation continuing in Jerusalem? That's what I'm trying to say. I'm not trying to justify
I understand. Believe me, I totally understand. And the answer is, of course, they're trying to steal all the land and keep it for themselves. And they're doing it in kind of slow motion, because I guess if they just do a giant Andrew Jackson Trail of Tears or another Nakba force march, that'll just be too much politically. So they're doing it sort of slowly. Right? Isn't that
exactly
the answer?
Exactly, Scott. But one interesting thing, though, and, you know, for those who are following the kind of tactics that Hamas is using, Israel is, in fact, trying to penetrate into parts of the Gaza Strip. They are trying to enter through the north. They are trying to create, security belts in various parts of Gaza. And every time they do so, they are actually being pushed back. Yesterday, they tried to enter. They sent their navy into parts of the Sea of Gaza. They entered in a couple of locations. They were pushed back. If you talk to a Hamas fighter, he will tell you we are resisting because it's actually delivering results. If we are not resisting, Gaza would have been taken over in the matter of hours, and we would find ourselves being subjugated the same way that our brethren is being subjugated in the West Bank. Mm-hmm. And then what do we do? At mm-hmm. least we are dying with a level of dignity, and at least Israel is not being able to enter the Gaza Strip right now.
Yeah. Well, the whole situation is just absolutely horrible. And you're right that the media bias and the false construction of the entire situation here in the United States especially does so much to perpetuate it. I'm sorry that we're all out of time. I hope I can get you back on because I don't think this crisis is going anywhere. And I love hearing what you have to say about it, but I got to move on to my next guest here. But thank you so much, Ramsey.
Thank you, Scott. You take
care. I appreciate it. Okay, that's Ramsey Baroud, and he's got a new one right now at antiwar.com/blog. Ravaging Gaza, the war Netanyahu cannot possibly win. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. Darren's Coffee. Order now at darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and save $2. darrenscoffee.com. Hey, Al Scott here. If you've got a band, a business, a cause, or campaign, and you need stickers to help promote, check out thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. They digitally print with solvent ink, so you get the photo quality results of digital with the strength and durability of old-style screen printing. I'm sure glad I sold thebumpersticker.com to Rick back when. He's made a hell of a great company out of it, and there are thousands of satisfied customers who agree with me, too. Let thebumpersticker.com help you get the word out. That's thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.